Everyone, welcome to a new episode of Caroline Talks. This is the podcast last YouTube channel where I, your host Caroline Hines, film critic and journalist, speak to film creatives around the world about their work, the industry, and what inspires them. And today I'm very happy to be joined by writer and director Nicole Chi and composer Diego Rojas to talk about their film Los Mosquitos. I knew it, and I knew I said in my head I'm gonna mess it up, and I did. I'll say it again. Los Mosquitos. And it's about these two young girls, Ari and Natalia, who are Honduran immigrants living in the U.S., and they are basically trying to find their way to find a connection to each other because they're not sisters, you know, they're not related by blood. So they're trying to learn what family means to them, and they have a caretaker, Magda, who is trying to be the adult, trying to be the caretaker, but Natalia, being the recalcitrant teenager she is kind of rebelling against that. But first of all, thank you, Nicole and Diego, for joining me to talk about the film. Thank you so much, Jane.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We're like really, really excited to chat with you. And I think it's the first time that we have like a dual like interview, Diego and I. So we really appreciate that space. Yeah. Able to talk about the music too.
No, for sure. I very usually, if I can, I try to get the directors, like the producers or the writers or cinematographers, but it happens very rarely that I'm able to get the director and someone else. I'm very happy that Diego is able to join me, and it's very rare for me, so I do cherish this. So the first question I have to ask, for you, Nicole, You're Costa Rican by birth, but the film is about two Honduran girls. Why did you choose two girls from of Honduran nationality versus like Costa Rican nationality to make the film about?
So I this film is shot in Austin, Texas, where I currently live, and I've been nurturing a relationship with these women from nonprofit organization that is a domestic workers and nannies led organization here in Austin since 2019, since I arrived to Austin. And so through that connection with that organization, I met Magda, which is the caretaker in the film. And so it's more that I wanted to be authentic about the family that I had met and that I had researched with. And that I have a relationship with, and that's why I wanted to make the film and honor the fact that they come from Honduras and like that specific experience that they have. Although we were like Central American countries, our experiences are different. And definitely for me as a Costa Rican that comes to the US, I come with in a different way, right? Like my migration process is completely different. But I do think that culturally, Honduras and Costa Ricans have a lot of similarities. And so when I met, there's a lot of Mexicans in Texas, but I felt like a special bond with the Hondurans because we are much more similar in a lot of ways. I was born and I was raised in Costa Rica. I lived my whole life there. So I very much identify as a Costa Rican and a Latina. And so it was more of a choice of being truth to the people that I had met and that I wanted to work with to make the film about the Honduran family.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you did do that because I think it's special that you did that because this is the family that you met and you created as an immigrant. And like I myself, I'm an immigrant. I'm from Barbados. I talk about this a lot, but I can't ignore it because it's just part of my identity. I'm Barbadian and I've been living in Toronto since 2009 with my twin sister. And the thing that really does help you to survive as an immigrant anywhere is forming community, you know, and it can, and like the people that I formed community with were people from the Caribbean, not from the same island, but from different islands across the Caribbean, but also people from like East and West Africa, and, you know, and even some people from Western Europe and Eastern Europe. And like community is how you're able to survive as an immigrant. So I think it's important that you did that when you made the film that you focused on a community that you felt connected with, you know, and that it helped to form a bond with them in order to make the film because you had them basically playing themselves, you know. You had, I'll pull up their names now. You have Magdalena Alvarez, who plays Magda, the caretaker, and then there's Natalia Rodriguez and Abigail Hernandez, And these are a grown woman, like Magda's, I'm assuming, like in her 40s, and Abigail and Natalia are two different ages. Abby is a teenager, you know, around 16, 17, and Natalia, she's younger, like 10, 11. And you have you have these three different generations of stories to tell, you know. So talk to me about that, about developing a story about three generations of Honduran women, because they're each at different places in their lives, you know. So how did you get them to come together and say, I want to make a story about the three of you?
So actually, they all, at the time that I first met Magda, and I was very close friends with her, and I started, she invited me to her family gatherings. And that's how I kind of started to get in touch more with like the rest of the Honduran community in Austin. But specifically, a year after I met Magda, Abby arrived to the US and they were living together. And then a few months after that, Nata arrived. And so it was actually the dynamic of the film in a way. And that is a dynamic that keeps changing also, because Magda has other family members and sometimes they live with those other family members. And it's like a constant change for them, out of need and out of necessity, of course. For me, I felt there was a special bond between them, and I felt like there was a lot of heart in Magda's family, and Magda's actual daughter also, who is like Abby's official caretaker, like in reality. And so, as soon as I met Abby, I was fascinated by her. I thought like, she is actually very shy, but I had like these very interesting conversations with her, and she would talk about her aspirations and like how she felt in the US. And similar to Magda, also she talked a lot about her experiences. And so understanding that they wanted to talk about how they were feeling and how their lives were here kind of really inspired me and kind of pushed me in that direction, because I felt like they wanted to talk about these experiences. And then Nata was just incredible. I developed the script as I was getting to know them. And so originally I was thinking it was going to be more just Magda and Abby, but Nata was always there. And like when I interviewed them, sometimes I brought a camera and then she would play with the camera, and it kind of just organically became part of the story, also because she had just arrived to the US. So like kind of her experiences were like what she was living at the moment. And Abby had already been here for a little while, so she had already kind of digested a little bit more her assimilation process. And then of course Magda, who has years of being here, is like much more assimilated to here. So I think like it's three generations of women that arrive at different times and that have assimilated different, like at a different pace in a way, to life in the US.
Hmm. And for you, Diego, how did you become involved with the project with Nicole? Like, what was that process like for you? And how did meeting these three people, like Magda, Nata, and Abby, inspire you with the sound of the film? Because like, again, there are three generations. So like the sound of the film has to not only fit the characters, but fit the aesthetic and the look that Nicole wanted for the film.
Yeah. So to answer your first question, this is gonna sound funny, but we've never actually met each other like personally.
Really?
Yeah. All our collaborations have been remotely.
Do you not live in Austin?
No, I live in Quebec.
Really? I am in Toronto.
Yeah. That's insane. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. we've never actually met, but how I came to be a part of this project was because we had collaborated on another project of Nicole's. It was a feature-length film. I don't know if you guys had spoken about this before I came in, but it was this feature-length documentary of hers called Yan. And so we collaborated on that. And, you know, there was, you know, this rapport and this vibe, this energy that we, you know, we experienced being afar. And so we thought, well, she came to me, she approached me, correct me if I'm not being accurate here, but so she approached me, I think late, was it last year or 2 years ago?
It was 2 years ago, like
2 years ago, yeah.
End of the year, because I was writing. And
yeah.
I had already worked with Diego and I loved working with him. I was like, oh my God, I'm in the writing process. And I wanted to, as I was writing, I wanted to listen to some
yeah.
of the music that we were going to have.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was sort of like my initial sort of like into the project. And then eventually that evolved into, you know, more things as Nico started writing, sending me like drafts. I would send her like ideas, not necessarily, you know, concrete ideas, musical like, motifs or things like that. It was just, you know, things that would get us both inspired and sort of like, yeah, and into the mood of film. And as far as setting a mood, I was, you know, I wasn't necessarily thinking of sort of like portraying something as far as music goes for the three individual characters. Mm. If anything, I was just more interested in setting more of a sort of like a psychological foundation, if that makes any sense.
It could have been.
Yeah. And I was just more interested in like sort of like setting the or feeling the film from the perspective of the two girls.
Mm.
And at some point I don't know why I instinctively thought that it would be a good idea to like record myself breathing, and that idea was something that Nico really latched onto.
Yeah, that was so important, actually. That was like, oh, this is it. Like, that was the moment for us, I feel. I mean, like, oh my God,
yeah.
This is so important for the music of the film. And
yeah.
I think Diego really understood also, like, how there were musical moments, right? Because I have a little trouble sometimes with films that have a lot of music. And we wanted to be, like, very thoughtful about the moments. And I love that Diego always respects that. Like, he's very much like, oh, yeah, like, we're going to do, like, those specific moments. And I don't know. It's really wonderful.
it's also, I think that it's a sort of, like, the material lends itself for a very nuanced approach. If I was, like, you know, instinctually trying to go, like, more music and, oh, let's have more cues here and there. And I think that would just force feed a set of emotions that they're already pretty much there. So I'm just accentuating that, if anything. Yeah.
So for the process of using the music, so it's interesting that you said you're in Quebec and Nico, you're in Austin. Is what was the actual technical process of developing the sound for the film? Because you were working on the sound while the film was being filmed, or did you get it, or did you get the completed version of the film and then you built the sound of the film after you got the completed version?
So it was interesting because in this process I asked Diego first to I gave him a draft. It was like the first draft. It was different from the actual final film. I gave him a draft of the script, and from that he started giving me a mood. and that helped me a lot, like on set, because like before I would shoot those specific scenes, I would like hear it and like kind of try to imagine how it would be, and that helped me my directing, but that definitely evolved when we hit the post-production, and then we circled back until I had like a fine-ish cut, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a more polished cut. And that's when like we had more conversations about it, right, Diego?
That was... Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. It was, yeah, there's and it's actually something that I appreciate from Rico, is that she really got me into this project really early on, and I really enjoy that, because for one, it's really hard to work. I always call it working against temp music. Temp music is sort of like the temp score, the temporary music to set the mood, to inspire the composer. But what it actually does is actually influences, or I feel like it influences me. And it's really hard to get the filmmaker sort of like detached from that idea. So
I think that happened. That has happened to me before, and I kind of wanted to like be freed from that.
It's swimming against the current.
But I'm here just thinking, how do you build a score and a song from just a draft? But then I just thought, sometimes when I read books, I kind of like come up with a sound in my head myself. Yeah. And it's kind of unintentional, and I don't even notice that I'm doing it. So I'll think of something from the book, and then I'll be like, oh wait, this was the sound that I had in my head as I was reading the book, you know. And it could be like a random song, or like I hum a lot, like I do a lot of humming unconsciously, and that's what it is.
Or so do I.
I hum. My sister's like, you're humming, and I'm like, I don't even know that I'm humming, and that's why my dog looks at me very weirdly sometimes. But it kind of makes sense now, like how you like the story can like influence how and like inspire you to come up with a sound, especially if you're a person that thinks in sound, you know, like
it's almost like thinking of it more as a director almost. It sounds weird, like I'm pretty much sitting on Nicole's like seat and for a minute and be like, okay, you know, what would I put in there? And just like, you know, just letting go, like allowing myself to just experiment and throw her ideas. And but that right now we're in a sort of like a relationship dynamic that allows us to sort of like feel free and pretty, feel flexible enough to just throw ideas to one another and be like, hey, you know, what if we try this?
Right.
That's what I appreciate a lot of Diego, that we were able to, like, I was like, oh, I think that's not the direction, but I feel free to be able to say that. And he's also free to be like, maybe this other thing. And I think that comes with time, because we already collaborated once.
That's what filmmaking is, right? It's a collaboration, and it's about flexibility, you know? Like, I always say, like, when I've never directed anything, but I've been on film sets before, I've done like set pieces and stuff, and I'll see how, like, the way an actor changes their tone changes the entire context and meaning of a line and dialogue, and they have to do it over and over again till they get the right beat and the sound. And then in the post is when the director figures out, okay, the way they said this line is why I want it delivered and how it fits in to the rest of the scene and then to the broader context. Like for a TV episode, this is the entire episode can change in context and tone based on like just the inflection of the performance voice for a specific line. So that makes perfect sense for me. And so then in during the process of filming, Nicole, when you have like these, like Diego's own drafts of the sound and like the score and everything, how not that it influences you on set, but like, how does that also help you with finding the rhythm of the story throughout the process? Cause like you said, the first draft of a script is never the finished product, you know, it changes and mutates over the course of filming. So how, like, but having that sound and like that identity really influences the way that you approach a film, because I noticed with the film, it doesn't have the score isn't really there, you know, like, because a lot of the sound is like natural sound, like the breathing of the characters, like the movement that they make, that's where a lot of the sound comes from. But then when the score does come in, especially in the moments where with Abby and Natalia closer to the end of the film, where like you get like the sense that Natalia herself is running from something. I get a sense that she's running away, but not from Magda, but she's running away from whatever circumstance, and like possibly the truth that her mother isn't returning. And that's where the score really comes in and makes you get the tension that's between these characters and the tension of their histories. But then there's like the sense of I get this word, the word in my head is mystique, because like los mosquitos, in my head, I want to keep saying mosquitos, because that's how we say it with my Bajan dialect. We say mosquitos, but the los mosquitos in this isn't like actual mosquitos, you know, but it's more of like a memory that they both share, like this memory that they have. So that's where the score really kind of informs you, like it's not the physical mosquitos that are bugging them, but it's actually the thoughts and the memories and the things that they themselves are processing in their heads that are actually the little mosquitoes buzzing around on the inside. So the score kind of gives you that. But like, tell me, during the filming process, like how did the sound that Diego created really helped with like the flow and the tone of the film for you?
I think it influenced a lot the writing of that, of those scenes where like the score is, and especially towards the end. I think it informed the tone that I was aiming for. And it was important for me to understand like the atmosphere of that scene, because I think before the music, before that preliminary music that Diego sent, I had a hard time verbalizing the atmosphere of the film. I think it helped me in verbalizing it. But it really did come more together in the post-production, like in the edit, like those like editing decisions and how like the music kind of builds that moment up came more in the edit. I had always imagined that it would be kind of cut in that way, but the rhythm of it really comes together with the editor and Diego's work. On set, honestly, what I did was that I listened to the track the day of shooting that specific scene of the end in the night. But other than that, like I left it until post-production to actually continue the work, because I knew that the song would change. So I didn't want to like hammer it down with like the preliminary one that we had. Yeah. Right.
And tell me how that actually works in conjunction with the cinematography by Carlos Estrada, because sound and visual go hand in hand in film, you know, like the sound and the visuals have to match. And for this film, there's like, to me, three different types of visuals for the film, like the way how it looks. Like there's in the house, like they feel is like natural lighting, you know, it doesn't feel like artificial lighting. It just feels like walking through a house during the day. And that suits the situations they're in, because the all three three characters, Magda and Nata and Abby, they're in their natural element, you know, like they're having natural conversations that don't even really feel scripted. It just feels like you're just there watching them. But then when they're outside in the field, that has more of like almost like not a fairy tale feel to it, but it feels more set apart from everything else, you know, like this is kind of like a dream like situation, you know. This is where like they're at peace, they're not fighting, they're not bickering, you know, they're just lying in a field surrounded by flowers and just like talking. And that has a very different feel to the indoors. And then the scene later at the night for the Thanksgiving dinner, that's where a lot of the tension comes, because like the music is playing, like they're playing like the Latin American and Central American music, and like there's the piñatas, and like it's supposed to be a festive atmosphere, and it's like the lights and stuff. But I got the sense that the lights were triggering for Nata, and they're triggering because the los mosquitos that she talks about are more like the lights that we see in our eye when we close our eyes, and you know, like those, I can't remember, I think they're like phosphorescent lights. I can't remember the actual term, but there's like the term
floaters. They're called floaters.
Yeah, like the floaters. But there's an actual term for it. But like when you close your eyes, like you see like the different like lines and squiggly dots, and that's what she's talking about. And she associates the actual lights from the party with that. And that's not a happy memory for her. So like that's where like you really get the sense of tension for Nata. And it builds from the beginning of the film, it really starts to build it, but that's where it really starts to come. And that's where like the score really kind of feeds into the tension a bit. But then the cinematography feeds into that as well, because the cinematography is like, for some of the characters, this is like a happy occasion, but for her, it's not. So talk about the cinematography and the score and the lighting working together for you to get these three particular feels of the film.
Yeah, I think it was a very thoughtful and conversations that I had with Carlos. We really wanted to have like we didn't want it to have tension throughout all the film because we don't think that that's how their lives are. Like they have those moments of happiness, they have those moments of ordinary life, but they also have these really deep tensions happening. And so for us, it was like really important to accentuate that through the photography and the lighting. And I'm glad that you are able to talk about like the night sequences, because those were like the most complicated ones. And I think that I'm glad that you can feel that tension and like all the theme of the light. And in conjunction with the music, it was a it was wonderful because Diego actually was the one that I was talking to him about the music. We had another song for the party and he came in like a music supervisor for me and helped me find another music that I felt fit better, that atmosphere. But I think like both sound and cinematography kind of come together more in the post-production space. I did feel like tension rising was an important direction that I told both Carlos and Diego. And so like heightening that feeling of like she's like of being stressed and like just wanting to run away. That was like something that I talked with Carlos in terms of like camera movement and just like being like following Abby and being more fast, right? But I like the how the music is actually more is the opposite in a way because she's entering that psychological space. And I think Diego and I talked a lot about the psychological space, and I talked a lot with Carlos about how the psychological space needed to feel different from the ordinary life. And that is why the ordinary life doesn't have a score. The only moment that it has some score is in the bathroom because she closes her eyes and she's kind of entering that space. And that's why we have that. And so the separation of those moments come both from the cinematography and the sound together. Yeah.
And you mentioned that Diego suggested a different song. Why did you suggest a different song to what she had originally for the party sequence?
So it was me. It was me. I was like, Diego, I don't know. I feel something off with this. And Diego is really good at kind of understanding me because I'm not a musical person. Like, I don't know anything about instruments. I've never been able to play anything in my life. So I can't really talk in musical terms. And so I just talk about my emotion with Diego. Yeah. And so I told you about it. I don't know if you...
So you're talking about the scene at the party?
At the party, like the song, like the cumbia.
Yeah.
What was it about the particular song that ended up in the film that you thought would be a better fit?
So that wasn't a song that I had. It was a diegetic piece that was in there, and I don't generally like write diegetic music pieces. So yeah, she came into me like one random day. She's like, "Oh, you know, this isn't working for you." And so I was like, "Okay, well, you know, let's try and do a little research." And I found out this band that was based in Austin and who happened to be in the festival at South by Southwest as well. And I was like, "Wow, okay, well, you know, this could be interesting. Let's see if." So I sent Nicole that link, and she made you know.
It was magical. Contact. It was magical because like I had another song and it just had like a different vibe. But when he sent me El Combo Oscuro is the name of the band, and I was like, oh wow, what is this? Because for me it was very important that the diegetic music party had the vocals. Right. And of course, this is a super small film. I can't make a song for this, and I also don't have budget to get like a very famous song. So Diego was incredible to just do this research, and he really quickly found it. And I was like, "Oh my god!" And I started listening to these options, and I'm like, "Oh, this is it!" And they were incredible. The Combo Scooter, they were so nice to allow us to feature the song in that film. But I think it's a happy cumbia, but it has like a something that kind of really fit into that tense atmosphere in Abby's head, I feel.
Right. So talk about this atmosphere in Abby's head, because like they're saying, like, to me the mosquitoes are mosquitoes are memories that she's running from, like the reality of her mom not coming back, you know. And I think for her, and that's the thing she's running from Nada. That's why she's so abrasive with Nada. And it's not that she doesn't like Nada or whatever, it's just that every time Nada talks, she's talking about her mom, like, has my mom responded, has my mom, you know, said something. And Abby doesn't want to say anything, not because she doesn't want to tell Nada. I think it's because she herself didn't want to acknowledge that her own mom wasn't responding, you know, that her own mom hasn't said anything to her since she's been there. So talk about the headspace of Nada and her not coming to the realization, but getting, I guess you could say, the courage to acknowledge it for Abby to get getting the courage to acknowledge it out loud to Nada, and working with with Natalia to do that, because I would assume this is their first acting roles, right? And they all three did such, I think, really good jobs with these performances. So talk to me about working with her and like getting her in the headspace of the character of Nada.
Yeah, I think do you mean Nada or Abby? I'm like a teenager or
Abby. I keep saying Nada, but yeah. I mean Abby, sorry.
Abby. So it was really wonderful to work with them. But it was a challenge for me as a director, because I really wanted to be respectful of like their actual experiences. It like the film is informed by some of their experiences, and I always approach it as like, this is a fictionalized version of yourselves. And the only reason why they call each other their actual names is because they couldn't not, like, I tried to have them, and like we did a lot of rehearsals where they were calling themselves different names, but they would get really confused by it. They just were not used to it. But I created a lot of rituals for them to distance themselves, their actual selves, from the character that they were portraying. And so like I would give them accessories that were just the characters, and like every time, whether it was rehearsal or it was on set, we would like invoke the character, and it was kind of like a weird thing, but like we would do that so that we would enter the character, and at the end of the day we would let the character go, we would remove that, and we would be like, oh, now I'm Abby, my normal self, and all of these. And so those kind of putting the limit between the character and their lives was very important, in particular with Abby, because she was doing the most, I think, emotional role in a way. And in particular that scene at the very end when she acknowledges it, was, I know that it was very difficult for her, and we talked a lot about that moment, and I know, and I think like I knew that as a director I had the power to like even push it farther and make her like cry or something, but I didn't want to do that, because I think like it was not necessary to push her experience in that way. I thought that wouldn't be right for me. And we did that scene just like two or three times. That was it, because I didn't want to continue going to that. And we had like a lot of, I talked a lot with my producers and my assistant the director to be able to make a schedule that would be respectful of this experience, and be like, okay, when we finish, when we can never finish the day of set with a sad emotion on them. And so it was like beginning of the day, we do this thing, and then we just change it. And we had to make the mood of the set like happy, because I could not let them go home feeling those emotions. It's like that I thought would be irresponsible of me as a director, especially because I know them. But I think like it was very brave, I think, of the three of them, all of them, to expose themselves in the way that they did in the film, and like to put their heart in it. I'm just really happy that they've been able to come to the festival and like see the film and share it with audiences and just talk more about their experiences. And that has been like really fulfilling for us. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, maybe. You did, because you did, because they are young performers, and even from Magda, like who's older, like being happy and for first time performers, giving them a tool, like a physical tool to distance themselves from the characters is important, because it helps them to let it go at the end of the day and not internalize it and just remember this is a character. Yeah, there may be similarities to my own experience, but this is not who I am. This is not me, you know, and it's a good way to distance themselves from everything, you know, and that's the, and I think as a, because you're very young, being able to recognize that that's something that you as a director needs to do is very important. And I wish more mature and older and veteran directors would do it, because that's how you get like actual veteran performers talking about, oh, method acting. Like you do not need to method act to play a specific character. Let that go. Why are you holding on to an accent and you're talking to someone on the street? You are not, stop it. You know? So like, I think it's very good that you did that, and it's very, and it's very thoughtful, and it shows a lot of foresight for you as not only as a director, but someone who is close to them, to know that I need to make sure that they don't hold on to this character longer than necessary. That as soon as you call a cut, that's it, you know, and they don't take it home with them afterwards. Because it not only helps them separate themselves from their characters, but it helps them separate each other from the characters. Because like you said, like it was harder for them to not call each other by their given name. So that would have created an extra, had you not do that, it would have made it difficult, I think, for them to let the characters go. So I think that's a very ingenious and very thoughtful and considerate thing to do. So let's see for that. And like and so something else that I wanted, you mentioned it earlier, assimilation. So that's interesting, because for me as an immigrant, something I always talk about is the difference between assimilation and integration. And I see, and to me, assimilation is when you just fully invest in the adopted culture. Like you don't want to like wear like your traditional dress. You don't want to listen to traditional music, anything. You're like, this is fully me, like using American, like I'm American. And like, therefore I have to shed everything of my past, let it go. Whereas I see integration as like, yes, I'm an American citizen now, but that doesn't mean I have to let go of my cultural identity. You know, I don't have to let go of my cultural practices and who I am. Like I'm a Canadian citizen. I've had citizenship even before I moved here. And I say I'm a Canadian citizen. I saw my passport and I flash it. I'm very proudly, because that has more power than a Barbadian passport. But I still call myself a Barbadian, you know, like I'm still a Bajan, and like I still like speak in my natural dialect and everything. And I said I'm not gonna let go of that culture. So I always look at the difference between assimilation and integration. And your film kind of touches on that, because like for Magda, she, like you said it earlier, she's assimilated because she's like talking about celebrating Thanksgiving, you know, whereas and Abby tells her, I don't want to be celebrating. Why are we celebrating that Thanksgiving, you know? And she's like basically saying like, we are indigenous people. Why are you celebrating the colonizers Thanksgiving kind of thing? And I thought that was a very interesting scene, because like, it's been a very big discussion in the last few years in particular, especially here in Canada, where you have Thanksgiving and a lot of people that are indigenous or immigrants don't celebrate Thanksgiving the traditional way, you know, like we and my family and my friends who are all immigrants, when we get together, we don't really celebrate it as traditional Thanksgiving, but we just as a way to get together. We're like, this is a bank holiday and it's a way, it's a day off from work. So we're gathering together to eat, you know, but we don't really acknowledge it as Thanksgiving. But for Magda, she's seeing it as Thanksgiving. So I want you to talk about that and like how Abby is struggling with Magda trying to get her to assimilate, and Abby's like, I don't want to assimilate, you know, I just want to be me, you know?
Exactly. I think that's an actual, like, real struggle for any immigrant, especially when they come in at a young age and there's, like, that parent figure that is trying to get them to, like, really fit into the school, really, like, just speak English now, like, you know, all of these tensions, and I could see it in her family, how like there's also younger children that they no longer speak Spanish, for example. And so like I really felt like more than, I think like more than assimilation is that especially for Thanksgiving, like they have appropriated themselves of the space they are in. And so they have this wonderful mix. Like, yes, it's Thanksgiving, but we have the piñata and we're going to have the tamales, but maybe we also want to eat the turkey. And like, I feel like that's wonderful. And that's how they do it. Like they just kind of take what is good for them. And like, they make this mix because of course, when they have a family gathering, it's all kinds of different levels of assimilation or appropriation of the space or integration, right? Like all of them are different. So one of them will bring the turkey because they are at that stage of like their migration process in a way. And another one would be like, no, I just want to eat these tamales. Or there would be Mexicans in the party and they would bring their tacos and like, you know, so it's that mixture I really, really wanted to portray through that party in particular. Because I think like that is kind of the essential experience of an immigrant in the US when they gather together in community and like they share that, it's like having their little island of like, that is who, where we come from, you know? And you kind of feel transported like to a different space. And so for me, the party was the hardest thing to shoot, but it was really important for the film. Yeah.
And your own experience being an immigrant from Costa Rica, like that, how did that inform you personally as a director? Because yes, you're showing like the Honduran version of Thanksgiving there. Like for my own family, like when we have the, like we do like the Canadian Thanksgiving, which is a different day to the US Thanksgiving, is we, our turkey is smoked turkey. We like, you know, we eat like, and then we will have like our traditional Bajan like meals for that, you know, that's we that's how we use it, you know, we use our traditional Bajan food. But for you, from having your own experience as an immigrant, like I think that also helped you to understand this need, Abby and Nata and Magda needing to separate from their characters from who they are, because that you yourself as a director have to be able to separate your own personal feelings from the act of a director. You know, you're like, I need you to do this, you know, and like, I like, outside of being a director, you probably wouldn't ask them to do what needs to be done. Like the scene where Magda pushes like Abby against the wall, you know, and like that's about showing like the tension in their relationship, and Magda just needing Abby to just like cooperate with her on this one thing. But on the outside of being a director, you wouldn't like want them to do something like that. But for you, like your, how was your own experiences helped you with like making this story about female, I think female immigrants, because I think the experiences of men and women are very different in certain circumstances, especially because this film, I think, deals with motherhood and like sisterhood, yeah, relationships between a daughter and absent mother. Like their mother isn't there, but their mothers aren't there, but they're still like functioning as daughters.
I think like for me, the immigrant experience is very, very important because it informs like how I view like the world, and I kind of like observe like how our experiences are different, and like in particular like the party and kind of the Thanksgiving part, it's like something that I've lived with, like the time that I've lived in the US at this point is like I've never eaten turkey because all my friends are like from different parts of the world, so when we do Thanksgiving it's just like a gathering to hang out, you know, yeah, we do like a potluck and we're just like bringing like all our countries different foods, and that's how we do it. And so like that kind of also inspired a lot like that a scene of the movie. But I think that beyond the immigration part, is I wanted to talk about motherhood too, and like family, and which is like a very universal experience whether you've migrated or not. And so that scene where she pushes the mother is like the tensions that arise, whether Magda is her blood related mother or not, she is the mother figure in that, yeah, relationship. And she loves Abby, and like she brought her with difficulty to the US and all of these like hardship, and she wants the best for her child, and that is a rising tension, right, in the relationship, because they don't see eye to eye about what is the right way to go about things in her youth, you know, as a teenager. And I think that's a constant struggle, whether you are a migrant or not. Like, as a teenager, you'll have that with your parents. And so I think I wanted to tap into those universal experiences of being, having a parent, you know, and that parent figure. And so we tried to explore that in that way. Magda having several children, and Abby also like having these different mother figures throughout her experience being in the US.
Yeah. And she also has like, Nata there acting like the busybody little sister. I thankfully have never had a little sister because I have a twin sister with the same age. But I imagine but then again, you know what? We fight like older and younger sisters anyway. Like we still argue, and we argue over clothing, shoes, or like music, playing music and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, but so you got those relationships done, and like you talked about your, like that's inspiration for you, Diego. Like for what, as a composer, what do you really look to that inspires you? Like, is there like a particular instrument, a particular song, a particular memory that you have that really, that when you're maybe struggling with coming up with a composition that you go back to and you say like, this is, it helps you to reset and recalibrate and like really refocus when you need to?
Yeah, this particular project was kind of special in a way that, like I said before, I wasn't really tapping onto my own musician sort of mind. I was looking at it more like a psychologist almost. Like I was just, you know, how does it feel to, it's funny that you mentioned memory, because that's exactly how I interpreted it. Initially, the title of the film was Floaters. And every time, I don't know if I should have disclosed that, Nico, sorry about that. For me, it was more about the representation of memories and how it felt for me to sort of like, you know, this concept of having a mother that I'm no longer be able to see right now. How do I carry her in my mind? How do I see her? What does it mean for me to hold on to this, you know, now concept that I'm not aware of anymore, yeah, you know? And so I actually sent a short snippet of it was like a synthesizer motif that I sent through a tape loop, and that went on and on and on and on. And it was inspired on this basic concept of memory, that it's if you hear it, it actually goes on in that scene of, I think it was Abby running away, and when she like sort of like finds herself, she's able to hear this memory of herself, whatever that may mean for her, and that's when the actual motif comes in, and it's just very fragmented motif that is not, it has no coherence musically, but you know, then again, it's like if you look into your past, into your memories, is there any coherence to them as well, or is there a string to the occurrences that happen in our past and the way that that we perceive them? Do they have any sort of like episodic element to them? So it was just mostly about that, tapping onto that, much more than, okay, you know, I want this particular instrument into this specific scene. It was more finding the concept in general.
Yeah, because memory changes, and our concept of our memories changes. Like, you know, one day we'd have a particular feeling about a memory, and you might have like a, I don't know, I think it's because of how my brain functions. Like, to me, memory has a physical sensation in my brain. And, like, you might have, like, a particular emotion attached to memory. Then, like, maybe, like, a few weeks later, you'll think about it and you don't have any physical attachment to it. You're like, you know, it might not be as resonant in your mind at that time. But I did want to ask you, this is something I've always wanted to ask a composer. If you had to have a soundtrack for your life, and I know it's like a passing question, but I've always wanted to ask this. If you could have a not necessarily even a soundtrack, but if there was a particular instrument or song that you could use to put to a film about your life, about your experiences, what would it be?
Okay, so this is probably gonna sound opportunistic, but today is the release of my debut album. So it came out today. Yeah, and not saying that that's like soundtrack of my life. I can't really say that I have a song or a piece of music that represents me. But I don't know if anything I could if I could say anything about, you know, that could sort of like be correlated to music and my process as a composer is, you know, the process of memory that really imbues my work. I'm very much into that right now. Now that I'm also sort of like making little strides towards writing on my own, like actually writing, story, like, you know, screenplays and stuff. I'm very much interested in exploring that. And not so much, in my own past, but, you know, that of my family. And I just get kind of steered away from what you're...
No, what you're, like, you, I'm sure, yeah. Like, writing, like, you have, like, when you're writing, you play, like, particular types of music, right? Like, when you're, like, to help with the writing process and creative process.
It's funny, I don't actually hear that. Because I feel like it's just... See, when, like, yeah, I've worked with other filmmakers in the past, and they're like, okay, you know, here you go. This is sort of like what we're aiming for. And that immediately, it's a, oof, you know, I don't know if I feel like I want to compete against that. Because if we're, you know, sort of like striving towards something original, you kind of have to like detach yourself from your influences. And not that I'm not saying that I enjoy the works of, I don't know, Max Richter and, you know, Mikhail Levi or whatever.
But, yeah. And for you, Nico, I know you have to go. So this is going to be my last question for you. Well, if you had a song for those mosquitoes in your life, in your brain, the floaters in your brain, what would it be?
Oh my God, I have no idea. I'm so bad with these kind of musical questions. I feel like I do remember that at one point of our conversation, Diego and I were talking about this very, like, it was Ryuichi Sakamoto with someone or something like that. And that was very key for, like, Los Mosquitos. And apparently, I really like Ryuichi Sakamoto. So maybe Ryuichi Sakamoto, but that's like so many music. Like so many different kinds of music. So, yeah, but no. I'm bad with this question. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It was a pretty sudden question. That's fine. Again, thank you so much to the both of you for joining me to talk about the film. I'm so glad to get both of your perspectives on the filmmaking process because, as I said, it's not often that I get to both the director and the composer. So, thank you so much for joining me. And for making the film, because it's really, having the whole Los Mosquitos as a metaphor for memory and emotions and emotions attached to memory, I think is really interesting. And like, I love the way you did it because you don't realize what it means until the end of the film. And then that's when I was like, okay, so this is what it is. And I think you did I think you both did a fantastic job with the film. And for you, Nicole, especially, like what you said about the way you worked on set, that's really impressive to me. So I applaud you honestly for that, because I've heard experiences from actors and I'm just like, that situation would have worked so much better if the filmmakers had done something as simple as like, say, this is what all you need to do is to let it go, right? So like, applause to you for that.
Thank you. No, thank you so much for having us. We had a great time and like really appreciate like being able to talk together about the film and the music.
Thank you so much, both of you. And have a good day and stay safe.
You too.
So everyone, that was another episode of Carolyn Talks. And today I was joined by filmmaker Nicole Chi and composer Diego Rojas to talk about their film, Los Mosquitos. It's a short film, but I think it says so much about how thoughtful Nicole is as a filmmaker, like everything that she got into this film and the way that the film works because of her filmmaking processes. I really am impressed by what she said about how she made the film work, especially because the three main performers in the film are not trained actors. You know, like these are just people that she has in her community and that she's had created as an adopted family. That she's like, let me make a film about your life, but not really, but it's about your life. And like the cure in making sure that she protects them not only as performers but protects their connection to their own experiences is really important, and it comes through in the film because the film, to me, as I mentioned, is about protecting memory, you know, but also running away from the memories that you don't want to acknowledge and protecting yourself against the truth in regards to the character of Abby in particular. She's protecting herself from a truth that she doesn't want to acknowledge, that Abby, that Nada unconsciously is forcing Abby to confront. And I think is having the story told this way is really important. And I think it's a really good way to talk to people about immigration and immigration assimilation, but also like showing how like immigration affects people. You know, it doesn't matter where you come from, this is how it affects you. And especially for children, like children have a very different perception of their relationships and their families and their homes than adults would, you know, especially adults that are living in a country for years. And like for kids who are just moving, like they have a stronger attachment. They're like missing home, you know, like they're missing their mother, but they're missing home. And I think that's what mom means in the film. And like, I think Nicole does a really good job of like translating that to the screen. So applause to her and to Abigail and Natalia and Magda for everything they did on the film, and the entire crew and Diego. Like, I think he did a fantastic job like translating the feel of the film into sound, because it really does work really well. And I'll post the link to his album that he mentioned in the description box. So please support Diego. And again, thank you so much to the two of them for joining me. And thank you so much to my listeners. If you're new, thank you for listening to Caroline Talks. And you like, please feel free to listen to all of my other episodes. And you can go to my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Caroline_Hines. And to my veteran listeners, as I like to call you, thank you so much for being with me all this time and for sticking around. And I really appreciate it. And for all of my previous coverage for film festivals like Sundance and the Busan International Short Film Festival, you can find links on my R3 page. That's authroy.com/Caroline Hines. And for Busan and for some coverage of Sundance, you can go to kcrush.com, where you can find coverage of work that I've done with creators from across the Asian diaspora there as well. And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram @CarrieSandwich12. And find pain links to my work there as well, but also like stuff that I'm interested in, like pictures of my dog Yoko. You know, like I'm very interested in advocacy and like using my platform, the platform that I have to like boost other people, but also like social causes that I'm very interested in there as well. So that's me. That's Caroline. I think I'm a very well-rounded individual. But until the next episode of Caroline Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye. Thank you.